It's a couple of minutes after 9 o'clock at 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine. Where for this next hour of programming, the opinions and views expressed are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California, Board of Regents. Good morning. It's time now for Talking Animals on KUCI. That's music from M. Ward with a song called I'll Be Your Bird as we ease into today's edition of Talking Animals on 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine, streaming live on the internet, of course at KUCI.org, and the whole shebang, Enterprise, Nine Yards, etc., is broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine, home, I hasten to add, that's right, of the mighty, mighty Anteaters. How can you do an animal show and not give the Anteaters their due? That's right, you can. I'm Duncan Stresson. I'll be with you till 10 o'clock this morning with a program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. Right off the bat, I'd like to tell you that for the next hour, you can reach us directly by phone at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And I absolutely urge you to use that number. Call us at any point in the show. Don't be shy. I'm telling you, we love, love, love to get calls. And we're all very friendly treatment here. We just look forward to getting the call. There's no bad things that can happen. No confrontational balogna, etc. Can you say Bologna on the air? Only if you choose to call it Bologna, I guess. You can also instant message us via AOL. Oops, you know what? And all the hubbub. I haven't even got set up for that. But I will as we speak, okay? Because that's just the kind of multitasking show that Talking Animals is. Or aspires to be, at least. So, yes, now, as of this moment, you can instant message us via the fabulous AOL Instant Messenger. The screen, not surprisingly, is Talking Animals. Other ways to be in touch include emailing us at talkinganimals@AOL.com and through our fabulous website, talkinganimals.net. Again, make no mistake, it's .net. Folks, also before we move on, I want to thank Serena Sharp for another rip-snorting, rousing rendition of the Serena Sharp Show. And thank the inimitable T.R. Black for occupying this slot last Monday with a wonderful Labor Day special devoted to the topic of unions, featuring fascinating guests and often spirited discussion. So I was out of town, but I did get to hear most of it, so that was cool. So meanwhile, here at Talking Animals, primarily we strive to learn about animals and animal issues from our guests, from news items, from your calls, from assorted other sources, but we're also here each week to celebrate animals through music, comedy, and other means. We aim for a spirited balance of those elements, as you can readily glean by visiting the aforementioned website, talkinganimals.net, where just about every show we've ever broadcast is archived. Indeed, we're caught up thanks to our webmaster extraordinaire. We didn't do a show last week, but everything up through August 29th is there for the listening and perusing pleasure, because we have some written synopses of each show, including also the animal songs, animal comedy, etc. So we try to be comprehensive and yet succinct. Possible? You decide. But if you've heard the show before, you've checked out the archives, or you're just willing to take my word for it, the heart of the program is the interview we conduct each week with some notable inhabitant of some province of the animal world. Today, our guest is Gloria Groh, co-founder of the Fauna Foundation, a Canadian animal sanctuary located outside of Montreal that began by rescuing and housing companion animals and animals used in the agricultural industry. But then, after launching with that focus, the Fauna Foundation broadened its efforts to also provide sanctuary for retired chimpanzees who have been used in biomedical research, becoming the first sanctuary in Canada to rescue chimpanzees and the first in the world to rescue chimpanzees who have been used in HIV research. So there'll be much to discuss, though I suspect chimpanzees will be at the center of that discussion when Gloria Groh joins us in a few minutes here on Talking Animals. Meanwhile, it's time for our weekly look of items of interest in animal news, and I want to remind you of the phone number to join us on the show with your own comments and questions about animals, not only this week's animal news items, but also any other animal topic you'd care to discuss, announcements, observations, of course, any news stories you might have spotted. They'd all be most welcome. Of course, we're going to devote a good portion of today's animal news segment to, you know, in and around the wake of the Katrina disaster, but we're also going to, if we have time, talk about other things, and we're happy to hear whatever you'd like to discuss at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. So, turning now to interesting and or important developments recently in animal news, and again, typically these are local, regional, national, sometimes international animal stories of note that seem important to spotlight, and with any luck to get your comments on and discuss, again, today with a little more of a focus on, unsurprisingly, on New Orleans and surrounding areas. We also try to include a few announcements of upcoming events or activities that you may want to pencil in on your calendar. So, once again, as always, having said all that, let's talk turkey, as it were. Produced, as always, by the award-winning Rip and Read Talking Animals News Department. Let's jump in. I may even jump in with something I didn't even have in hand when I put the news cast, if I may use that term ever so loosely together. But let's start off, actually, with a little piece from yesterday's L.A. Times on this very topic. Dateline's Gonzales, Louisiana. First came the flood, then the animals, and not two by two. There are 200 dogs here. There are 50 cats. A pot-bellied pig sleeps in the hay. Parrots and cockatoos flutter in cages. An iguana stands as still as a statue in a terrarium. There are goats, snakes, rabbits, guinea pigs, a pet rat, and even a flying squirrel. There are horses and mules, too. Chestnut miniatures and massive Belgian draft horses. Arabian racers and white stallions that used to pull newlyweds through the French Quarter. Altogether, there are more than 220 equines here. The stables of the Lamar Dixon Expo Center and 4-H Center in Gonzales have been transformed into a menagerie of refugees, home to many of the animals that were lost or abandoned during the flood. Animal care organizations from around the country have poured into Louisiana to assist in the rescue and care of pets and horses. Quote, "We're trying to get a way to get more of them," said Catherine Destreza, the director of New Orleans Animal Services Department. These people have lost everything, so if we can at least give them their dog or their horse, it won't be so bad. Pets have become a hindrance for rescuers, as many survivors of the flood are refusing to leave deluged homes because they want to care for their animals. Many rescuers have stopped residents from coming aboard boats with their pets, and most evacuation shelters do not have facilities for animals. Destreza said that animal rescue efforts could help persuade people to leave their homes. Quote, "It blows my mind that FEMA and the Red Cross don't think about that," she said. And it goes on from there, but we've got plenty more info along these lines, so we want to kind of get to it. Including, you know, the obvious questions are, well, what can we do to help? I mean, some people are able to actually go down there and help. That's great. Some people, of course, are not able to do that and want to help out in one way or another. So we have some ideas for you, some information along those lines. Among the people kind of at the forefront of this are the Best Friends Animal Society. They run the sanctuary we've talked a lot about on the show. We've had at least three of their founders on the show over the years, and that's the one based in Utah. It's Best Friends Animal Society, but they run the probably the biggest sanctuary in the country for abused and abandoned cats, dogs, but they have a bunch of other animals as well, and they have really sort of incredibly well-organized operations. So one of the things you can do just generally is contact them at hurricane@bestfriends.org, and that if you can help out, if you can actually go down there, if you have supplies, if there's anything else that you think you can donate in terms of time, resources, whatever, hurricane@bestfriends.org, or it's easier for you to phone them. It's 435-644-2001, extension 398. That's 435-644-2001, extension 398. And, of course, not surprisingly, another key organization in trying to help our animal friends in the wake of the Katrina disaster is the Humane Society of the United States. So if you go to hsus.org, and right away you'll see all kinds of information, things to click on, including accounts of some rescues, ways that you can, again, help out. Yet another important database online for this is the Pet Finder database. And so they've now set this up. It's disaster.petfinder.com/emergency. And some of the sections there includes my pets need help, I want to foster or volunteer, I have found a pet, show me pets that are lost, I am a rescue worker, I need to search the databases. So I think they've got all the ground covered. That's petfinder.com. If you just go there generally, they can direct you to this. But again, it's disaster.petfinder.com/emergency to get specifically there. Back to Best Friends Animal Society. Again, really top-notch organization. So, of course, just any kind of a dough in their direction can help them help the animals. So that's bestfriends.org/donate. And again, any lost animals or anything else that you want to report or seek information about, their email address set up specifically for this is hurricane@bestfriends.org. Also, not surprisingly, the ASPCA is very heavily involved in this, so you can make a donation to their disaster relief fund and phone them at 866-275-3923. And you can also make a secure online donation at aspca.org. And if you have goods that you can donate, things that would help be helpful to the animals, food, other supplies, we'll get into another list momentarily. But they have an email set up for this, which is outreach@aspca.org. And if you do send an email, obviously people are swamped, so just try to be as specific as possible, provide as many details about what you're asking or what you're offering, just to speed along the process. SaveAPet.com is compiling a list of people who are willing to foster animals who need care and have been separated from their human companions, shall we say. So that's probably the simplest thing there would be to call 1-800-SAVE-A-PET. And that should get you there, or just simply go online and search for Save a Pet, or just go to saveapet.com, and that'll take you to the appropriate section. And there's yet another way to foster a dog or a cat in particular there. The website is katrinafoundpets.com/app.htm. Again, you can call in or email talkinganimals@AOL.com or IMS. Talking Animals is the online is the screen name for the AOL Instant Messenger, and we can give you any or all those details again. Let's see, I have another. Well, let's see, let's read a little bit more of this. Well, that's kind of a repeat in a sense, but you know, like everything about the coverage of this, both, you know, on TV, but especially in print in a way, the still pictures, I mean, this is from a few days ago in the LA Times, but it's a picture of two dogs afloat on a pile of wood on a flooded street in New Orleans, and, you know, let's hope these guys have been since rescued with some of the same resources and people, you know, again, and rescuers have streamed in. I mean, I can't even tell you how many emails and communiques I've received along these lines, and a lot of people have gone there. Let me just quickly see. There's another list here. Again, hurricaneofbestfriends.org is really good, just as a general thing. But when you do that, just again, to save time, include in your email to them your name, your phone number, anything that you can do. If you're missing animals, you know, chances are you probably aren't listening to this, but if so, then, you know, the names of the animals, the descriptions of them, where the animals are, and again, you can donate online, bestfriends.org. There's ways to volunteer to help out, whether from here or there. hrf@bestfriends.org is the email to deal with that, and there's all kinds of help. I mean, whether you have experience in this area or just can help with some dirty work, grunt work, whatever, anything like that would be great. And let's see. Yeah, and then there's a whole list of items that they could use. But again, you can get that at those online sites or email us here. Let's, just because it's kind of heavy and, you know, another picture. You know, of course, just even the aquarium there in New Orleans, of course, has just been so devastated. And there's just like a, you know, beautiful, slightly, you know, a poignant, if not heartbreaking, picture here of a guy from the Audubon Aquarium in New Orleans holding Patience, a penguin, and just like hugging him. And, you know, beautiful picture. But again, just sort of helps illustrate kind of what animals in all kinds of situations, even captive animals. We may not necessarily love aquarium zoos and other things where animals are held captive, but they've been through a hellish experience as well and need help. So some of the same resources that I mentioned, you can help those because they will sort of funnel people off into different directions that are willing to help, especially if they can get there at all. But again, there's so many things you can do from here, so that's hardly necessary. And again, for a lot of people, it's just simply not practical to get down there, and people understand that. So let's do a slightly lighter thing, which almost anything would be, I suppose. Although, you know, there's some pretty uplifting stories about animals that were rescued and dogs swimming to someone and being scooped up and licking the guy's face, and, you know, those things are being those animals are being placed in different temporary kind of shelters, and every effort is being made to find their we don't like to say owners usually, but companions, human companions. So it's time for our mid-news or past mid-news animal quiz. And so here's the way it works. It's a true-false question. The first person to call with the correct answer will have their choice of prizes, including, I've got tickets to a show I would jump at the chance to go to myself. I may just go separately, not from these, obviously. But this is tickets to the New Pornographers, a fabulous band from Pacific Northwest, the Great White North, whatever. And their new record is absolutely terrific. So this is a hot ticket, if you ask me. This is for a show September 29th at the Music Box at the Henry Fonda Theater up in Hollywood. So if you are the first person to correctly answer this question, you will have your choice of those tickets or Talking Animals merchandise. And by that, I mean Talking Animals t-shirts, sweatshirts, coffee mugs. We also have books, CDs. I'm not going to go into all of them now because we're running a little behind. And but some of those same things will be available later towards the end of the show when we play Name That Animal Tune. But you're only for the first person in either case who called in with the correct answer. All right, so here we go. If you know this, call in 949-824-5824-949-UCI-KUCI. True or false? The hummingbird is the only bird that can fly backward. True or false? 949-824-5824-949-UCI-KUCI. All right. One other thing, of course, you know, at least circling around the Katrina catastrophe related to, you know, our focus here at Talking Animals, is about the fishing industry. I'll just read a little bit of this to you. But, you know, that region normally supplies about 30% of the nation's seafood. Again, those people who are following a vegetarian or vegan diet aren't obviously as directly concerned, but there's, of course, large financial and other implications to this. So I'm still going to read a little bit of it to you just because, again, it's just part of just the overwhelming catastrophe here. This is from Grand Isle, Louisiana. When Hurricane Katrina made landfall last week, it crashed headfirst onto this half-mile-wide finger of sand and marsh grass, Louisiana's only populated barrier island. The storm's impact on the homes and businesses here is obvious. When the wind failed to shred and splinter, the storm surge washed away. Now as cleanup begins on this remote island, the extent of the damage inflicted on Louisiana's $2.7 billion fishing industry is becoming clear. Around the region, the marinas, shrimp sheds, ice producers, and supply vessels that support the fishing industry are destroyed, grounding the fleet. I got to quit like watching three things at once here. All right, sorry. Grounding the fleet of offshore fishermen, shrimpers, and oystermen at what should be the height of the season. Officials say the long-term outlook is bleak. Estimates are that it will take 18 months to get commercial fishing up and running, but when that happens, it may not be worth it for some fishermen who must invest as much as $1 million for a shrimp boat to go back out. Quote, before the storm, when you weigh the price of fuel and the price of shrimp, I'd barely make it, said Renee Vargas, who owns the Bridgeside Marina here. Now it'll be so much worse. Vegas said that normally most shrimpers find other work after the season ends in December, but under the current conditions, quote, winter starts now. So I think that's all we're going to really have time for at the moment, at least, in today's edition of the Animal News segment here for Talking Animals. But, again, if you have any questions, any information you want to check, any of those emails or websites, you can call us at 949-824-5824-949-UCI-KUCI or IMS, AOL Instant Messenger, the screen name is Talking Animals. And we'll be happy to get that information to you. So, of course, meanwhile, if there are ever any news stories or announcements of events you'd like to bring to our attention for a future show, please feel free to email us those also at talkinganimals@AOL.com. We'd also love to encourage you to email us with any comments about the show, suggestions of future guests, ideas about animal songs, comedy bits, and any other animals topic that's on your mind. That email, again, is talkinganimals@AOL.com. And I'm pleased to remind you, perhaps redundantly, but maybe not, I don't know, about the Talking Animals website. We hope you'll check out the site, talkinganimals.net, that's .net, and sign up for the email list. We can keep you posted on upcoming guests and other announcements. You'll also find archives and synopses of all the shows, assorted photographs and articles, all kinds of links, other audio pieces, and more. So please stop by and take a look around the site again at talkinganimals.net. It's time to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which, as always, of course, involves animal-oriented comedy. Thought we'd hear from our an old friend and a previous guest on the show today. This is Triumph, the insult comic dog, with a piece called Call to Kennel on today's Comedy Corner here on KUCI.
Yes, hello.
Yes?
Yes, good. What kind of dogs do you have?
I have mixed breed dog.
I'm looking for bitches. For a beach. Female.
Any particular breed?
No, why don't you tell me what you've got?
I have German Shepherds, I have Border Collies, I have Labradors.
Okay, Border Collie. You have a Border Collie?
I have a Border Collie mix.
A beach?
Yeah, at the moment I do.
A beach, okay. Now, border collies, they're, it's a little hairy there, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're pretty furry.
Yes.
Yeah, that's, that might be, a lot of work to, you know, to find it. And tell me this. What, the other breed you had was what?
Labrador Retriever.
Labrador. They're very obedient, right? Yes?
Yes.
Good, good. They'll do what you ask. What, and what, you have a girl?
Yes.
Labrador? Okay.
Yes.
And is she big or...
They're puppies. They're 7, 8 weeks old. So.
Well, okay, I can wait. But, I mean, yes, I, is it a black beach?
No, it's a yellow.
Yellow, okay, I can work with that. And is she active? She has a lot of energy, yes?
Yes.
Because I'm going to run her ragged. I mean, I can go for like 6 or 7 hours, seriously. Describe her legs to me.
They're dog legs.
Dog legs, but they're long or...
Not for the breed, no.
Not for the breed? Okay, and is her rear end, is it... It's not a bony kind of rear end.
I don't think so, no.
Good. And it's clean, yes?
Yeah.
Okay, very important. You don't want to deal with that. Okay, so you don't have any small dogs?
No.
Okay, because I look pretty huge next to small ones. How long is her tongue?
I don't know.
What kind of bark?
She has kind of a high-pitched bark.
Can you
at the
do
moment.
It? Could you do
all
it?
All puppies do.
Could you do it for me?
No.
All right. One more question. How much would it cost to spend just 1 hour with her? You know, as opposed to buying the whole kit and caboodle. Do my business and, you know, everybody's happy.
Why don't you just come in and look at it? I have a customer at the counter. You thank you. You have a good day.
All right.
All right, that was Triumph, the insult comic dog, in the Comedy Corner with a piece called Call the Kennel, taken from his Grammy-nominated album, Come Poop With Me. The Comedy Corner is, of course, one of the signature features of Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and you're indeed listening to Talking Animals at KUCI 88.9 FM, broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. As many of you know, we also stream live on the internet at KUCI.org. Some of you, no doubt, are listening that very way, and some of you, perhaps, arrived through our swell website, talkinganimals.net. Before we proceed, I'm obliged to remind you that the opinions and views expressed on Talking Animals are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. Earlier in the show, I mentioned that our guest today is Gloria Groh, co-founder of the Fauna Foundation, a Canadian animal sanctuary located outside of Montreal that began by rescuing and housing companion animals and animals used in the agricultural industry, but also sort of broadened its efforts to also provide sanctuary for retired chimpanzees who had been used in biomedical research, becoming the first sanctuary in Canada to rescue chimpanzees and the first in the world to rescue chimpanzees who have been used in HIV research. So there'll be much to discuss. So I suspect chimpanzees will be at the center of that discussion as we welcome Gloria Groh to Talking Animals. Are you there, Gloria?
Yes, I am.
Great. Thanks so much. Welcome to the Talking Animals.
Thank you for talking to me today.
Absolutely. I want to, of course, move rather quickly into discussing the Fauna Foundation and especially the topic of chimpanzees, but I think we'd be remiss to do so without first finding out a bit about your own background. I mean, where did you grow up, and to what extent were animals an important part of your formative years?
I guess really basically there's not really much to say except that I, for some reason, I always, well, like most kids, loved animals.
Mm-hmm.
Happened to have, you know, at the time I was young growing up, I didn't seem to have a lot of friends, but my best friend was a little dog named Teddy. And later on in life, I ended up feeling that I needed to work with animals because animals were just, seemed to be who I seemed to connect with better than humans. I ended up becoming a dog groomer. I met a veterinarian. We sort of went into business together. You know, I had a grooming shop next to a veterinary practice, and then we ended up hooking up together, and we're now, you know, a couple. So animals have been my life.
Mm-hmm.
Animals have given a lot to me, you know, work-wise, emotionally, certainly, and logically for me, choosing a career working with animals was, it was just a logical thing. Some people work with children, some people work with, older people, some people work with, building cars or creating things.
Sure.
This was my path, and I found my path. And at the age of 40, I felt I wasn't doing really quite enough. I'd already started to, you know, I obviously had 19 dogs and cats living with me at that time, because that's just kind of what happens when you work with animals. You end up sort of, you know, strays end up finding their way into your life. We ended up having to move to a farm because we had too many animals living in our house. And once we started the farm, then I realized there was a desperate and urgent need to rescue farm animals as well, that they were in a lot of trouble also. And looking after those animals, I sort of saw the bigger picture and just realized, oh my God, there's a lot of issues, and started to join animal rights groups and things like that, and found out so much more about what was going on, and ended up going to one of the animal rights conferences in Washington, D.C., where I was so moved and motivated and touched by all that I heard, all the different people that were there speaking at that time. Dr. Jane Goodall was one of them, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And she, of course, was the one who on that particular day said that there were chimpanzees that were in biomedical research facilities used for horrific experimental purposes, and that there was a need to build sanctuaries for these individuals. I, at that time, honestly, did not have a clue, or even, I wasn't even aware that this was going on. I don't know why I didn't know this was going on. You know, I knew that monkeys were used, and I care as much about monkeys as, and in fact, pigs are my favorite animal, so, I mean, I knew that all this was going on. I just wasn't aware that, and also aware of the fact that there was a need to build sanctuaries for them.
Sure.
And there was someone else named Dr. Roger Fouts who was there, who, and Peter Singer at the time, who sort of was trying to make the analogy that chimpanzees were our closest relative, and they had an extremely important job making the connection between animals and humans, because there's something about a chimpanzee, again, because they are our closest relative, that can sort of make the link between animals and humans.
Sure.
It's pretty hard for people to make the link between a rabbit and a human, and or a chicken and a human.
Mm-hmm.
But you, as you go along the scale, you end up with a chimpanzee. You tend to, you know, how people dress them up and make them look like humans. You know, they mimic us and copy us. And not that that's what I'm saying is the, you know, why, you know, that is unfortunately one of the reasons why people are attracted to the primates and especially chimpanzees, but it has also been one of the reasons why they've been so exploited and used in biomedical research. And when he said that they were the ambassadors, it just seemed logical at that time. I had already been rescuing a lot of other animals, and it seemed so logical that these individuals could be ambassadors for the others. And from my experience and what I found out with working and living with the chimpanzees that live with us, they truly are ambassadors for the other animals.
Sure. There's
something about them that magnetizes people to them, and they are able to be the voice for other animals. You know, people come to my farm now, which is, you know, it started out as rescuing dogs and cats, and then the farm animals were there, so we always discussed, you know, the issues and the problems around the farm animals. And on the way over to meet the chimpanzees, people have to hear about these other animals. And
mm-hmm.
So by the time they get to meet the chimps, they've now heard about the plight of animals in intensive farming and, you know, what happens to chickens and why the chickens and why the turkeys and why the pigs are living with us.
Mm-hmm.
So they're sensitized by the time they get here to the chimpanzees. And you realize, like, how, what, you know, people from around the world have come to meet the chimps that live here with us today.
Mm-hmm.
So they truly are, they have a huge role. And you know, with the fifth, I was fortunate, and so were the chimps, certainly. There was a laboratory that was closing in New York State, part of NYU,
mm-hmm.
New York University's medical facility. 250 chimpanzees were living there. It was like the third largest at the time in the United States, and their chimpanzees were going to be dispersed and spread throughout the country to different laboratories. The veterinarian that was working with them at that time felt that the chimps had been betrayed, especially the individuals who had been infected with the HIV virus, because they were all previously either in private ownership, in the entertainment world, or even some in zoos, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Chimpanzees do often end up in biomedical research. So they were a group of older individuals that were chosen for the HIV research because this veterinarian had been promised an endowment by the university, promising that these chimpanzees would, if they survived, of course, and at the time no one knew whether they'd die of AIDS or not. And I will just fill you in on that very quickly. Most of the chimps that live here now have eliminated the virus. So the billions and billions of dollars that have been spent on HIV research on chimpanzees, and the chimpanzees in particular here, who have now just automatically eliminated the virus. No one knows how they've done that or what's gone on, but they just do, so they don't die of AIDS.
So right, so first of all, it has no value, right? I mean, that doesn't really tell us anything, you know, back to ostensibly why they were infected with it to begin with, to study it. It doesn't serve any purpose that way, because obviously it works differently than the way it does in humans, right?
Absolutely. And, yeah. You know, as close as they are to us in so many ways, I mean, I'm not trying to take away the fact that they are our closest relative and so on, but they are, they have a completely, their tolerance to pain is, you know, on one hand, their tolerance to pain is in absolutely phenomenal. I could, you know, I've seen chimpanzees sitting with their finger, you know, bitten off by another individual, yet when they have a bite wound or a scratch from another chimpanzee, they're just obsessed with it. Or, you know, they seem to, you know, their pain tolerance on one hand seems to be extremely high, yet on the other hand is really low, you know. So it depends on, I guess, it must go back to a basic primal kind of protective instinct. You know, why is it we don't know when an individual, we've three of the chimpanzees that have lived here have passed away, and honestly, we did not know they were ill until, you know, the day of, and we had 4 hours with one individual. It's almost as though they, you know, in the wild, they would go off and die on their own. They wouldn't, they don't want to show their vulnerability.
Right. Probably as a predatory defense, right?
Yeah, so, you know, so it's illogical that if they're in a laboratory cage and you're doing all the, you know, they were challenged on a weekly, monthly basis with different strains of HIV virus, you know, so of course they stay infected in the laboratory.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and now they're living in sanctuary and they're not challenged anymore with the virus. They're not given any more infections and so on, so they don't. Their bodies just have naturally eliminated them.
Sure.
And again, they are, you know, they are wild, and there's something very different about how they defend themselves, and they don't show their vulnerabilities. It's like they refuse to, you know, especially to the humans that are working with them. It's very difficult to detect that. You know, you have to know the individuals really well, and so, you know, I don't understand how, and I guess that's why so much invasive work is done on them in laboratories, and why, you know, blood draws must be done on a regular. A blood draw to a chimpanzee sounds like a simple thing. Unfortunately, it can take up to 2 hours. They're nearly, you know, they're convulsing, choking, gagging, urinating, defecating, and throwing themselves against the sides of the cage to avoid having the needle put into them that would put them to sleep for a two-minute blood draw.
And is
so
that
to nearly kill an individual before you actually, you know, need just to take his blood from him, is just doesn't make sense at all. I mean, I just came back from a conference in Berlin where they talked about alternatives, and they're using animals to prove. These are researchers now using animals to prove that animal research is not good. And the animals they're using, first of all, they're basically saying the minute you put them in captivity, you've already affected their cortisol levels and their stress levels, and, you know, all their body works differently the minute they're in captivity. Restraining them increases all of these other factors as well, which actually interferes with what you'd call the research and
sure.
The good research and the results and so on. So here we have, you know, doctors now in research trying to prove that these are bad models. But unfortunately, you know, it's reaching that you need to reach the public. You need to let the universities know. You need to let people know that there are. You cannot believe the number of alternatives there are out there today. And they estimate that in 20 years there will not be animals used for research.
Right.
You know, that's. Why not in 10 years? Why
sure.
not in 5 years? I mean, it's just because the money's just not being put into that area.
Right. Gloria, let me ask you a few questions. Let me first just tell our listeners, this is Talking Animals on KUCI, and we're speaking with Gloria Groh, co-founder of the Fauna Foundation, a Canadian organization that rescues and provides sanctuary for an array of animals, really, but including chimpanzees, obviously, previously used in biomedical research. If you'd like to join the conversation, have a question for Gloria, please call us at 949-824-5824. Let me just hit a couple of real sort of basic questions, and I want to get right back into chimps. But when did the Fauna Foundation begin, and relative to that, when did you guys start providing sanctuary for the chimps?
Well, in 1990, we actually moved into the farm and started, you know, the rescuing of farm animals and so on. And it was in 1997 that we started, you know, we took the 15 chimps from LEMS, the Laboratory for Experimental Surgery and Medicine in Primates.
Mm-hmm.
And eight of that group were HIV positive chimpanzees. The seven others were actually born in the laboratory, born to be used, tortured, abused, and live a life, live as long as they could endure the studies.
Sure. And let me ask you another thing, Gloria, back to what you were saying before about the blood draw. Is that really sounds just horrible reaction? It sounds like each time. Is that consistent across the board? Like, let's say if one chimp was always in a biomedical research setting and another chimp at least had some time, say, in a zoo or in a performance setting. I mean, do they react consistently no matter what their background is, or is it more so because maybe all they knew was the biomedical research lab kind of setting?
Well, okay, I'll give you an example. We within the last 3 years, we had a situation where we were able to rescue a chimpanzee that lived at a zoo, a local zoo. He was, his mother and his brother both died within 2 years of each other, and he was going to be left alone there, and so they placed him with us. Toby has no fear of needles. You know, he's not experienced needles before. You can, on the other hand, we are now approaching our eighth anniversary. If you show these individuals a needle or try to do anything or put the rubber gloves on or a mask and goggles, you can switch them right back to the behaviors they had while they were in the laboratory. It's a memory that is so clear and so strong in their head that it's impossible to they just don't overcome that. It takes a lot of It's always, always, always extremely stressful. It's one of the hardest things that sanctuaries face. And sanctuaries, you know, when we rescue them from biomedical research, you know, of course we have, you know, we're left with the diseased victims of biomedical research.
Sure.
And we're trying not to put them through the same stresses that they had in the laboratory. So we're trying, we try to find other ways. But there are no really other ways, to help them. It takes years for them to overcome that. You know, I'm talking about 6-year-old chimpanzees and 7-year-old chimpanzees that were my youngsters, who are now they're teenagers now, who were darted each week with dart guns while they were in the laboratory. Darted. Now, these are tiny little bodies.
Yeah.
That were just, and I know the dart is like 2 inches long. It's coming from a pistol. They're in a 5x5x7-foot cage. They have nowhere to go in this tiny little body. In fact, there was a gentleman that came to visit who used to work with the chimpanzees in the laboratory, and a lot of the ex-laboratory workers have come to visit the chimps in their new life. A lot of the people that worked with them, couldn't leave once they started. They realized that what they were doing, that the purpose and the reason they went into the laboratory, they thought they were going there to, save humans from all kinds of horrible diseases, and chimpanzees had to be the model. Then they happened to actually fall in love with some of the chimpanzees, and then they witnessed it each day. They witnessed the atrocities each day. There was a gentleman named Tom who came to visit, and he had worked there for 23 years. He remembers the day that Pablo, an adult male chimpanzee who was considered, this is the description I was given when I met him, he's a hardcore research guy. Now, this means he didn't cooperate. He never, ever presented his arm or his leg to have, voluntarily get an injection, because a lot of the chimps do. They eventually sort of realize, oh, my God, I better do it, or else it's, they do give in eventually, obviously. They have to. He remembers the day Pablo had 5 darts in his body at one particular time. Now, chimpanzees are incredibly quick. Pablo had been in the circus before, so his teeth had been removed from the front of his mouth, and the others had been filed down. He had a dart in his gum line, because obviously he was screaming with fear. He had a dart in his head, and he had 3 others in his body. And Tom, the gentleman who was telling the story, and he told us, of course, he was purging. This man was telling the story because he had to tell someone.
To get it out,
This is an adult human male bawling his eyes out while he told that story to me that night. He needed to let me know what Pablo had been through. And when Pablo's autopsy was done, his body was stuck to adhesions. That's the thing that basically kills the chimpanzees. Not the diseases often, but yes, the dart is clean as the dart leaves the gun, and the needles are clean. But by the time the chimpanzee is so stressed out, and I mean, we're talking about an hour it takes to knock them down in the cage, they're covered in urine and feces.
Yeah.
And they're salivating, and they're just, you know, they're just, it's like the, what is that? There's an expression for someone, the flight. When you're running for your life, you'll urinate and defecate, and it's as though you're going to die.
Yeah.
So each time they had to endure this, it was in their mind, in their body, as though they were going to die. So all the entry points were now dirty.
Yeah.
And so these are not treated. These are just, you know, the needle goes in. There's a small infection that, you know, develops over the years.
Sure.
And Pablo, when he was cut open, you know how a normal intestine would come out? If you open a body up, the intestine is the part that just kind of plops right out. It falls all over the floor. The pathologist who did the work on Pablo, he worked only with large animals at a veterinary college near here. He was mortified. He couldn't believe what he saw. You know, it took them over 1 hour to just cut wedges of Pablo's intestine out.
Mm.
It was so stuck together. His lungs were stuck to the wall of his body. Nothing was moving freely. These were adhesions, and humans suffer from adhesions, and now they're dealing with that. You can go back into the hospital and have, you know, the scar tissue that develops around a surgery.
Yeah.
Except the entry points of needles weren't dealt with as though it was a, you know, and so what happens is eventually the body just doesn't function normally and properly.
Sure.
You know, you have scar tissue throughout the body, the lungs, you know, nothing's working normally, or, and each of the chimpanzees has passed away here. That's exactly what they look like on the inside. Besides the fact that their livers, with, you know, the liver is the largest organ in your body, and we've already done an ultrasound on one of our residents who has a lot of problems, our little Yoko, who's a guy who has had over 140 liver biopsies done, and there are chimpanzees that have been documented to have over 300 liver biopsies done. That is just absolutely unimaginable. Your liver can take only
so much, yeah.
Or, you know, so much. And what? And the Yoko's liver is the size of a small tangerine.
Mm.
So their livers, that's, you know, these are the things that are killing them. Donna Ray's kidneys were completely destroyed. They're just, you know, they're on the outside, they look perfectly healthy.
Yeah.
But the insides are destroyed. And besides their emotional state, I mean, this is the part that is very difficult also as in taking care of the chimpanzees and looking after sanctuary. You know, each day, you know, in the laboratory, certainly they exhibited more of this, you know, the stereotypical behaviors, the rocking, the self-mutilation, you know, screaming continuously. Like, you're actually right now, I'm in the chimp house and it's perfectly quiet. And when I went to visit the laboratory, there was never a moment of silence.
Excuse me for interrupting, Glory, but this might be a really appropriate time, especially because we're nearing the end of our time, to introduce Gene into the conversation, just because what you said there about the screaming and some of the stuff just kind of reminded me of the story that you told at the conference a few months back.
Yeah, and you know, when I met the chimpanzees at the laboratory, of course I thought, well, you know, I was told as I arrived not to react, not to cry, not to make any comments about what I was seeing. You know, and fortunately I was wearing mask and goggles, and people didn't see how I was reacting. But one of the very first chimpanzees I met at LEMCIP, she was in the cage on the left. She was just in that cage, the small cage, and there was five other cages in a line with her, and then across from her there were five other cages. And this chimpanzee, when she saw, you know, three new strangers standing at the door, she instantly started to react. She started screaming, spinning, urinating, defecating, throwing herself at the sides of the cage. Her eyes literally rolled back in her head. There was, you know, she was salivating and she was having a breakdown. She was a meltdown, any word you would describe. And she had already been declared a chimpanzee who had had a nervous breakdown during her HIV work. So they already knew she had a lot of problems, but they did absolutely want her to go into retirement. So that's why I got to meet her, because she was one of the designated chimpanzees that was supposed to come and live at Fauna. We had to leave the room for a moment while Dr. Mahoney called for some support from someone, and it was one of the people that worked with Jeannie for 26 years, and he called him on the intercom, and I actually got to see through the window, a tiny little door, I saw this man walk up to the cage and just, you know, put his arms and his body right to the cage, and I just and Jeannie came right over to him. I mean, she was terrified of us. She had no idea who we were.
Mm-hmm.
She received comfort from him at that moment, and, you know, for her, and what I saw, you know, I was emotional to watch that because
yeah.
I saw that she obviously had someone that she cared about and someone that cared about her. He was comforting her. She was terrified, and it's calmed her down long enough that we were able to go back in within 15 minutes, and she looked over at me at that moment, and there was a look in this chimpanzee's eyes that was so loud and clear, you know, that... get me out of here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was no doubt in my mind that that's what she was saying. And it was a 6-hour drive home from there that day, and I basically cried the whole way home because she was the, you know, there was no way at that point we could not go back and do something to help them. And
sure.
This was all a negotiation stage at that point. At one point, there was a question of whether Jeannie could come to live with us because she couldn't be socialized. There was no way that they could put her with other chimpanzees. Clearly, because of her psychological problems, they put her on medication and hoped that they could introduce her to other chimpanzees. And I remember going back on about my fifth visit, and they said, it's not possible. She's not going to make it into the group. And I spoke to this gentleman who worked with her, and he said, she'll be fine once she gets out of here. You've just got to work. You've got to get her out of here. He
mm-hmm.
was pleading with me. Jeannie came finally to us, thank God. We made separate arrangements. I convinced the veterinarian that what if I make a place for her to live on her own, like, and then we just work on it, you know, and
sure.
she lives alone now, for God's sake. So he agreed, he knew that we could possibly have problems. She came, and she was on medication initially, and this was a challenge each day we faced with her. Every time we walked in, she'd have her meltdown. Each day she'd, you know, self-mutilate, attack herself,
yeah.
Couldn't tolerate any change. And it took over a year before I was able to actually touch one of her toes. You know, we worked
mm-hmm.
and worked and worked. By the second year, she would allow me to touch her fingers. Now, most
mm-hmm.
chimpanzees do present body parts and ask for grooming and ask for... they need you. You know,
mm-hmm.
there's such a bond. But she just didn't trust. She's 25 years she spent in that frigging cage.
Oh, geez.
By the today, and it still, you know, just still touches me each time
mm-hmm.
she does this. We have these what you call a porthole. It's a small place that I'm able to, you know, serve her food and so on. She actually. You know, I'm not saying that we should hold chimpanzees' hands, but
mm-hmm.
this chimpanzee who reaches out now to have some contact, she wants contact, she
mm-hmm.
needs contact, she
sure.
asks for it. She takes, what she does, it still kills me, is she actually takes my hand and holds it over her heart, and she presses her left hand on top of my hand and holds it there. And she just sits and rocks very gently back and forth. She's got her back to me, which is a totally submissive gesture for a chimpanzee to do that in the first place. And
mm-hmm.
all I feel from that is that, you know, if I've touched her soul and she touches mine every single day, you know, she's never going to be normal. She's not ever going to have it. You know, that normal life's been taken away from each of these individuals the minute
sure.
you lock them in a cage. But her, how she's progressed and who she is now is not the crazy chimpanzee
yeah.
I saw in the cage that day.
Sure.
So it works.
It's
you know,
amazing.
There's hope for life after research.
Absolutely. And you know, the second time I heard that story, and second time I've cried. So pretty amazing. But that's actually probably where a great place to end our conversation. I wish we had more time, Gloria, but I do want to tell listeners that the website is thefaunafoundation.org. There's much more information, including about all the great education and outreach efforts that you guys put forth, and information about some other things I would have loved to get into if we'd had the time, about enrichment. But the website's really great and comprehensive.
The website will tell you a lot, and
yeah.
there's lots of things coming up. And I thank you again for your compassion and your understanding about the plight of chimpanzees and obviously so many other animals. You help, because you cared about Jeannie's story, you've made Jeannie a very important, everyone needs to know about her
yeah.
and her life and what she's endured. And I thank you so much for sharing her story with everyone.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much for your time, and keep up your fantastic work, Gloria. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Duncan. Good
okay,
day.
Take care. All right, I want to thank again Gloria Grove for joining us on Talking Animals. Her organization, one more time, is the Fauna Foundation, just outside of Montreal in Canada, and it's faunafoundation.org. I'm Duncan Strauss. You are listening to Talking Animals on KUCI in Irvine, 88.9 FM, streaming live on the internet at kuci.org, And it's time to proceed to name that animal tune. Again, pretty much like any version of Name That Tune you care to mention, except in this game, the tunes are always animal-related. So play a snippet of this tune, and there'll be a prize for the first caller who correctly identifies this song, including, again, your choice of tickets to the New Pornographers, September 29th at the Music Box at Henry Fonda. If you're the first person at 949-824-5824 to identify this song, it's Name That Animal Tune on KUCI. Can you name that animal to you? 949-824-5824. And we got other prizes. If for some reason you can't go the 29th to the New Pornographers at the Music Box at the Henry Fonda, and we got other prizes, which we mentioned earlier in the show. But I am Duncan Strauss. We have just about reached the end of this week's edition of Talking Animals. I want to remind you that the views and opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCI, or the University of California Board of Regents. I want to again thank our guest Gloria Groh. One last time, our organization is the Fauna Foundation, also what I didn't mention when she was on the air, but of course you can donate through that website, and I certainly urge you to at least check out the website and send them a few bucks if you can. They're doing amazing work, obviously, as the Gene story. And the things that she mentioned really, I think, testify to. So I hope you'll join us next Monday, September 19th. We'll be joined by an illustrious, but as confirmed, as yet unconfirmed guest, but it could be a really cool name in the animal industry, pretty well-known movies made about the guy, etc. So I don't want to spill the beans just yet, but I would definitely urge you to tune in next Monday, September 19th. By the way, there are other great public affairs shows on KUCI, including Weekly Signals with Mike Caspar and Nathan Callahan on Tuesdays at 8 a.m., the OC Variety Hour, hosted by Cameron Jackson on Wednesday at 8 a.m., and Black Guy on KUCI with T.R. Black on Thursday at 9 a.m. So check out those, and of course we got other shows 8 to 9 and 9 to 10 each weekday on KUCI, and again at 5 o'clock, 5 to 6 p.m. So I also host a music show called The Dead Air Zone here on KUCI, Tuesdays 10 a.m. actually, 10 a.m. I'm often here an hour early for some reason. No, it's 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. It's a wildly eclectic mix of music, covers, and comedy. I hope you'll check it out, and again I want to urge you to check out our website, talkinganimals.net, and when you get there, please sign up for our email list. We're going to alert you to guest bookings and other events and announcements. Also, I encourage you to email me with comments, guest suggestions, ideas about show topics, and comedy bits, animal con bits, news stories, anything else you'd like to pass along at talkinganimals@AOL.com. I look forward to hearing from you. Please stay tuned for Jeff Scott and the Blues Disease, his great, great blues show here in KUCI. This has been Talking Animals on 88.9 FM. KUCI? You're on the air line with KUCI? All right, so Jeff Scott and the Blues Disease coming up next. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. And as always, we're closing things out here with an animal-related tune. This is the Tiptons with the Penguin on KUCI in Irvine. We'll catch you next week on Talking Animals.